Hi, thank you for watching the podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for consuming it in whatever way you can. And if you enjoy it, please head on over to YouTube, hit that like button on the video, hit that subscribe. We're a very small channel. I'm not upset with that, but I love to continue to grow and get bigger. And if you like it, the best way to spread it around for other people to see it, literally the least you can do is by hitting the like and subscribe on YouTube. If you're a big fan of this podcast or just of me, there's ways that you can support me and just continue to roll with me. You can go to twitch.tv ron_funches, join the Funch Bunch, come play video games with me. If you got an Amazon account, and who doesn't, you can link it up to your Twitch, and then you can subscribe to my channel. Gives you access to different emotes, gives it commercial free, as well as it supports me and allows me to go buy more video games. And I love that. Twitch.tv ron_funches. Also, I'm going to be in Austin, Texas, October 27th through the 29th at Cap City Comedy Club with my great, wonderful friend Blair Saki. If you want to come see us do comedy, come there. I will be in St. Louis for the Flyover Comedy Festival. I've forgotten the date. It's November 5th or the 12th. One of those is around sometime in November. And then I will be in Chicago, Illinois for the Rosemont Zanies with Laura Peak. You can get all this information at ronfunches.com if you really want to come see me. And I truly appreciate it. Other than that, watch Loot on Apple TV Plus. Watch Harley Quinn on HBO Max. Check out my pro wrestling podcast. If you like pro wrestling, we do it live every Sundays at 5 p.m. exclusively to Spotify Live and Spotify. You can call in. You can chat with me. You can chat with my guests. This last week, we had the wonderful Brody King. We've had Tony Schiavone. We had just, you know, if you like wrestling, you like me, go check it out. It is called One Fall at Ron Funches, and I really enjoy doing it. And so the more listeners I get, the more likely I'll get to keep doing it. So please come on by. Other than that, let's get to the show. I hope you're feeling strong. Today, I hope you're feeling brave, because you need to be brave in this world. It's scary times out there sometimes, and you got to go out there and act even in the face of that fear. Again, strength and bravery is not the absence of fear. It is acting in the face of it. So be brave. Know you're going to make mistakes. You're going to make some errors out there. You're going to fuck up. But the best thing you can do is to, when you realize you make a mistake, is own up to it and press forward and make some changes. I hope you're feeling loved. Hope you have a great circle of people around you who believe in you and take care of you and want the best for you, regardless of what you can provide for them or what you can do for them. They just believe in you and want you to succeed. The type of friends that tell you harsh truths that you may not even want to hear, that tell you when you're fucking up, that tell you, just tell you when you're off course, and when they see that you're happy, or when they see you're not happy, or they see you're struggling, people who can really see you, even if you're trying to hide it from the world, you know, that's lucky to have, and that's a true blessing. And I appreciate that I got wonderful friends and family around me. And so I'm grateful for that love, and I hope you are. And I'm grateful for this past weekend of going to Indianapolis to go do shows at the Helium there. Not my favorite place to go travel to in the world. It usually tries to destroy my diet with fried food. And I didn't have my friends to go with me this time. Blair and Gabe and everybody was booked up and had something to do. And so to be honest with you, I was kind of dreading even going out there. I thought I was going to have a bad time and people might be mean to me. I had that racist security guard in San Diego the few days before. So I was just wondering if, you know, I was like, well, I'm going to where the Klan ran rampant. So who knows what will happen when I get there. But it was such a breath of fresh air to go out there and see so many people who were excited to see me and have been waiting for me to come back to Indianapolis, and meeting comedians out there that were working hard and trying to get better, and interesting to be in this position that I'm in comedy, where I have both so many people who I look up to and I'm trying to reach a next level. And at the same time, there's people who look up to me and talk to me and ask me questions and want advice from me, and comedians that now call me Mr. Funches, which is, I think, ridiculous, but I didn't stop them. I like it. I like that level of respect and reverence. So I was like, sure, you're 20, I'm 39. Call me Mr. Funches. And it's nice to get that. And it's nice to, if you have the opportunity to get some help, even if you don't know if it's going to lead to anything, just why not? You know, I mean, I guess really just breaks it down to this one little story where I met a comedian after my show, and he was just talking about how he was performing in the side room upstairs, and he looked pretty funny because he had big belly and a beard, you know, like Santa Claus with a drinking problem. And so I was like, hey, you know, maybe you want to do a guest set so I can see if you were actually funny. I can, you know, just for me to enjoy. And he talked to me about how his nieces love Trolls and love the stuff that I was in, and they love Noel, which I don't even think any people had saw, or if they saw, I didn't think they knew I was in it. So it was really cool. And so I just made them a little voicemail as Cooper and sent it over, and he was like, man, you really made my week. You really, you know, he's like, this means so much to me. And I was like, that's funny, because this didn't mean much to me at all. And in that interaction really can show you the power of just being kind and being nice, right? Like, I just took a couple minutes out of my day. If anything, it helped me, because I was like, oh, we're going to do this late show. It might be rowdy. You do 5 minutes, so then I can do 5 minutes less. And if you're good, great. If you're not, you're doing a guest set, so it's a features issue to follow you, not me. So I'll be fine either way. And then doing the voiceover is just like, I love it when people love myself. And so again, it was nothing to me, but it meant so much to him. And we all got that type of things we can do in our lives, whether it's helping the less fortunate, helping people with a kind word or a smile, someone who's working in the, especially in customer service, especially as we continue to approach the holidays. It's just been high stress and rough for so many people. And it's like, the least you can do is be patient with someone, have a kind word with them. Remember, you're just there to purchase some fucking gift or item that doesn't really matter that much, that they'll probably forget in 6 months. So the least you can do is be kind to that person who is having to stand on their feet and be there for hours on end to hopefully feed their family. Because, you know, I met somebody in Indianapolis this last week who was working at the hotel, and I could just look in her eyes and see the tiredness, to see the lack of sleep. And I was like, hey, what's going on with you? You seem real sleepy. I wasn't trying to say she looked like shit or nothing. You know, she did, but that was neither here nor there. I was just like, you look real sleepy. And she's like, yeah, I had the late night shift last night, and then I had to come back here, and they wanted me to do the morning shift. And then before I got here, I had to go to the food stamp office. And I was just like, damn, you know, like, there's a lot of people out there. You don't know what people's day is like between when you see them at work for that little interaction that you have. You don't know all the other 23 hours in a day of what they're carrying. Whether they got family issues, or they're going through separation, or they got someone who's sick at home. You never know. So the least you can do is make the little extra effort to be kind, extra effort to be a little bit nice, because that's what's going to be needed these next few months. Be a fucking merriment marauder. Be a warrior for joy and warrior for peace, because there's so many people doing the opposite. So we need you out there. So why not? Other than that, just been really, almost feel like there's been a light switched on with me. Feel like the last couple months I've been a little bit depressed, a little bit stressed out, just a little bit worried. And just this last trip, this weekend, talking with my friends, talking with my family, talking with my spiritual guide, Danny Sage, talking with my wife, just talking with all these people, and it really like re-engaged me and it flipped the switch, and now I feel more like me than I have in months, and I'm excited about the next few months. I'm excited about the holidays, about getting through the holidays, about getting back to work on Loot. I'm working on my comedy and really pushing my growth. You know, I feel like for a minute I was just kind of happy to be where I am and be stagnant a little bit. And now I just feel so much potential in me. And I think, you know, I had took a lot of L's. Everything that I was pitching, everything I was trying to make, everything going around was getting denied, you know. And I think it just beat down on me. And but now I feel re-engaged, reinvigorated, excited for my sons. I love my sons to death. They are the motherfucking best. I got two fucking great sons. So happy. I love my life. I love my talent. I love the gifts that were given to me by the universe. And it is my duty and my calling to sharpen these gifts and to bring as much joy and happiness into this world. And you know, I'm a big believer in mantras. So before we get into our guests, I just share my mantra that I've been working on. Anytime I've been getting on stage and for the last few months, I used to have a different mantra, and it was all about relieving myself of fear and just flying free and knowing that I'm going to make mistakes and just going against that. But now I'm feeling real confident. I'm going to be 40 in 6 months. I'm trying to get in the best shape of my life, not just physically, but mentally, but spiritually, re-engaging my spiritual life and my aspects. I'm a weird ass motherfucker that believes in a lot of weird shit, and I've been laying dormant in that type of stuff. So I'm re-engaging with tarot, re-engaging with all my stuff that I've been doing, my spiritual circles, everything that I love. And I'm going to just get closer and closer and get back to my true self. And I'm real excited about that. And I hope if you feeling muted, if you feeling dull, if you're not feeling your true self, or you don't even know what that is, I hope you go on that search. I hope you have those people around you that remind you and tell you that you're the fucking shit, and to remember your mantra. My mantra is, I'm a vessel of light. I'm here to spread joy, and I'm the motherfucking shit. And that's always great to remember, because it's a great balance. I'm here to bring peace. I'm here to bring love. I'm here to make you happy, and I'm fucking damn good at it, and I know it. And you can't tell me otherwise. Hope you find your mantra, and hope you find something that pushes you and turns your light switch. And I'm excited for the next few months. And we're going to keep going on this podcast and refocusing on this. So it's going to be fun too. Including this episode with our guest, one of my dear friends, one of my favorite comedians, favorite actors to work with. You might have seen the two of us together in the film Golden Arm. If you haven't seen it, please go check it out. He's been in some great Skittles commercials. He's been in the sketch group Dead Kevin. He's been in an Adult Swim show called Dream Corps. He's just a cool dude. And I hope you enjoy him. Give it up for my friend, Ahmed Barucha. Enjoy it. Be good at your health, be your health. But don't forget your spiritual life. It's about having bad sex and doing a good thing and doing the best that you can. It's about getting better. We're working on getting better together. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ron.
Of course. I've tried. My voice went into the podcast a little bit. I had to readjust back to me. do you remember when we met?
Yeah, we met in Seattle in the comedy. Was it called the Seattle Comedy Contest?
Seattle Comedy Competition.
Yeah, we made some pie.
We made pie. You, me, Jen Saunders.
Oh yeah, and Josh Gondelman.
Mm-hmm.
We made blueberry pie.
We did make a blueberry pie. I think it had a lime zest.
Yes, it did.
And it was delicious.
That was the first pie I ever made. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, from not knowing how to make pie, she was really helpful to teach us how to make pie. You remember what year it was?
I think it was 2009.
It was 2009. Which means I've known you for like almost 15 years.
That's crazy. 15 years? Oh my gosh.
It's fun to go back. I was just looking at the lineup today and going back, and it's like, it's really fun because somehow we all look older.
Yeah.
I look like a 40-year-old accountant.
I always use that contest as like an example to like, for people who get like frustrated with contests and stuff, because a lot of the people who didn't win are doing great things. Mm-hmm. You know? It's like Mark Norman was on that year.
Yeah, it was one of the best and most frustrating times of my entire career. For people who don't know, the Seattle Comedy Competition, I don't even know if they still do it. I imagine they still do. But it, at least at the time that me and Ahmed did it, it had this nice legacy of people who had done it, like Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah. Doug Stanhope,
Doug Benson, Patton Oswalt. And it had this also legacy of like all these people would get second place and then the winner would be some guy you never heard of in your life. And I didn't understand that. I thought I was confused, but I was like, oh, these people have done it, so I'm gonna go do it. And then I learned quickly how that happens, because only one show is in Seattle proper where I think we all did the best. And then everything else is in these little suburbs and offshoots of these tiny little trucker towns and
it's
Bremerton.
Grueling. It's like long. It's like a month long festival. But there's two first years. I think Richard actually was in one of the other week. Mm-hmm. He wasn't in our week, but I think he was in the same year.
Yeah. And it was just wild because it was like people, I was just looking, so I remember it's me and you and Solomon Giorgio, Mark Norman, Cy Edmondson, David Cope,
Jesse Campbell,
and all the people who like that we got along with and were enjoying each other. We were all bombing, getting ninth place, 10th place, 11th place.
I went like down every while. I was like, oh, I'm in the middle. Oh, I'm on the bottom.
Yeah. And I still even remember to this day who won, which was Roger Lozola.
He won the whole thing?
He won that one year, yeah, for sure. And because I remember it hurt my feelings because he was like, oh, you're a good writer. I'm going to let you write for me on my show one day. he was very egotistical.
Yeah.
Let's see how that turned out.
Maybe you can still write for it.
I hope so. That's okay, Roger. I love you still.
Hi, Roger.
So let's just talk a little bit about your last couple of years. I don't know how you feel, because again, going back to that 2009, looking at us, and we're like in our mid late 20s, and now. Like I said, I was doing the intro, and I was talking about how it feels weird to be in this space where I'm both technically a veteran of comedy and still feel like I don't know much at all.
Yeah.
And still have some of these young comedians call me Mr. Funches or whatever. And so I just want to ask you, how do you feel right now? Yeah. You got your two kids. You're a full grown man.
Thank you.
How does your comedy feel? Well, good. I'm sorry. Abby, tell him he's a full grown man.
God damn it. I am a full grown man. She does most of the stuff.
Well, how are you feeling comedically and just in your life as far as being in charge and taking care of a family and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, that part, I feel pretty good about the family. I feel like a grown up in that capacity, like taking care of my kids. But like pandemic and kids have made me feel like rusty with stand up, you know, like I'm kind of getting back out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is weird to be doing it for so long, but have this like dip and like I'm like uncomfortable on stage again, like, like just getting that rust up. And I've been doing a lot more. Like my daughter was born about a year into the pandemic, and then I took like a year off for her. Like, you know, I would do like a Zoom show or something, but so she just turned a year, and now I'm like going back out. It feels good, but I'm still just like, okay, how do I just learn to trust myself, I think, you know, because I feel like a lot of times you get nervous, but you can be funny, like, you know, in your everyday life, you're not thinking about it. But when you're on stage, you just have that like rust, or you're like, oh, God,
I gotta tell you, and you tell me, you know, what you think about this, but I think kind of the first couple months when things are opening back up and you would see all these comedians back in their notepads and back pacing before a set. And it really, as much as I was like, oh, I don't like how this feels, I was like, I kind of really like this. I like this, like getting back to, oh, I don't know. I don't know how this is going to go.
It's like before a date or something.
Yeah.
You're like, what's going to happen? Are they going to like, yeah, it is exciting. I feel like there was, before the pandemic, I was a little bored of my stand up or just bored, like, you know, just kind of doing the same thing.
Complacent.
Yeah. You're like, oh, what else do I have to say? I've said a lot of stuff. I've written a lot of jokes. What else? And now it's kind of back to just being like, ooh, will this one joke work?
Mm-hmm.
Like, can this new idea, can I get this out? Can I fix it? Can I not throw it away? So yeah, it is exciting in that it feels like, I don't know, like a little bit of nerves.
Mm. I want to talk to you a bit, just for me, I guess, a little bit about your writing style, because I really enjoy your viewpoint. You've been, last time I saw you, you did like I think pretty much your whole set was about bugs.
Yeah.
So how, because I know when I write, I guess this would be my best way to ask this to see how you differ or what do you do, is usually when I write a subject, I go from a place of emotion first. Like if something has embarrassed me or made me scared or something, usually I go with, oh, I love this, because that's just what's most fun for me. And then I just go into the subject and I try to find the silliness aspects of it or the things that contradict each other within the subject that I love or that I was embarrassed about. And then I just see you talk about like butterflies and bugs and ants and stuff. And I just wondering, like, how do you write?
Yeah. I mean, I still am trying to figure that out. You know, like each time it feels like a different process, but like with that, like I have like those ant jokes. That one was actually like, I was literally just trying to force myself to pick a pretty banal like topic that we all see ants. So I just started looking at them and going, what do ants do? Okay. Oh, everyone hates ants, right? So do I hate ants? And sometimes I like to take like the contrary, like, okay, everyone hates, no, my wife was like mad at these ants and she was killing them and she was getting really aggravated and I wasn't. So it was kind of, okay, there's this like, maybe I'm going to defend ants. I'm just, ants aren't so bad. Ants are cleaning up your house, right? And that's really what it was like our house was never cleaner because we didn't want the ants. So ants are like helping us keep clean and just kind of just studying them and just started writing more like, okay, what else about, so usually it's just like, what else, what I come up with the topic and then I just start like just throwing everything on top. And then when I get on stage, I kind of shave it all down, but I'm just like, all right, what, like, you know, okay, they, what happens when they're walking in a line? Okay. What happens when I find them? What do they look like a beard or something, you know, like on a plate, just more and more. Just everything goes, I guess.
I like that. That's interesting. Okay. I could take that and use that for my own needs.
And I guess another thing is like, I have all these tags or whatever. And as I keep telling the joke, I just start pushing the stuff that's like working more forward in the joke. And then, so then that kind of becomes like the core of the joke. And then everything else is just like, I'm trying it after. So it's like, you know, I have like, okay, the ants, they're hardworking. If you kill them, they still try. And then whatever gets the biggest pop, I kind of slide it earlier and then have that be this like base.
Like you're building a bridge.
Yeah. And then I could throw out all the stuff that's not working.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. I want to talk to you a bit. You're such a great actor. I think you're very subtle, but also sometimes you can be over the top whenever you need to. And so it's a good balance. When did your love of acting start? Was it before comedy? Because I also know, you know, your sister's a director and you guys work together often, and we've all three have worked together often.
Yeah.
So I just want to know, like, assuming it was like a lifelong family thing. So
I think it was early on from like child, like it's hard to know what came first, like comedy or acting, because I think it was kind of there when you're young, it's like the same thing kind of, you know, like you watch like a comedy and you think that's acting and comedy, like, you know, like a Billy Madison movie or something, or and you're like, oh, they're acting there. But so we would do a lot of like little plays as kids, like Christmas plays. Like I can't remember how old I was at that point, But you know, my mom showed me like stand up when I was really young. Like was Cosby, which I don't say as much anymore. But I watched like himself, you know, and just thought, oh, what is that? That's so cool. It's just a person standing there and everyone's laughing. That's like awesome. But with the acting, yeah, I always wanted to do like sketches. I loved like Kids in the Hall and things like that. And so I'd always make like home videos as a kid and just being funny in class. So early on, yeah, just like, for as long as I can remember, I was interested in some form of like filming comedy and making people laugh. Mm.
And can we talk a bit about like how we met in LA? Was working on the Dead Kevin sketches,
yeah,
which I really enjoyed. And, you know, have a few episodes with. I really, you know, I loved the episode I was in, and then I always just fell in love and watching the sketches with you and Richard Payne. And
yeah,
right. I always thought he was so funny, and those like that really showed a spotlight of what he was good at.
Yeah,
you know, and it was really fun because I feel like during that time period there was nice like homegrown buzz of like, oh, we love these guys in their building. And then you guys got the like Comedy Central Digital show, and then it ran for a few seasons, and then you kind of had to move on and all three of you start doing your own thing. Yeah. And I just want to know, what has that transition been like? Is that in a way a lot like growing up on your own to be like, oh, I've been working with this group for so long.
Yeah.
And now I do mostly by myself, or I go out and do, you know, movies or studio movies or independent movies, you know? And then I just wonder, was there any type of, and I don't want to put words in your mouth at all, but like, I just remember being so excited and then being like, oh, I can't believe this isn't pop as big as I thought it would pop.
Yeah, know? I definitely feel like that. Like, you know, we kind of felt like this was, you know, we were like going to Comedy Central, pitching shows. We're like, we got this, you know? And it kind of just, you know, we pitched a show, didn't take it. They pitched another show. They let us write it. And that was cool. They paid us to write it. And I think that was, maybe we all three kind of reacted differently to it. I was like, great, let's pitch another one. Like, they didn't take the one we bought. I think with Ryan and Jack, they're a little bit more like, oh, like defeated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh man, they didn't take it. That's it. And for me, I was like, who cares? Let's just throw that one out, write a new one. And I was getting married at the time, I think. And so we just kind of, our schedules kind of didn't allow for, and we had, at that point, we'd done like 150 sketches. And we were just like, all right, let's take a break. And we're kind of coming back, and like tomorrow I'm filming some stuff with them. And so, yeah, it's, I don't know. They're still like my like best friends, and I don't see them as much because now I got kids and they're still like partying and and just living like that. And, but yeah, it was such an organic kind of start, and they're both just so nice and, mm-hmm. and like good people that it was really awesome to just keep going with them. And I still feel that way about them. So like, I'm excited to go back tomorrow. We don't even have any ideas, right? That's what was kind of great with them is we just go, we show up and we know we're going to think of something and we just film it.
Well, that's beautiful to hear that you guys are working together again. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
And maybe we can to just go in a little bit deeper. Maybe we talk, cause I never really had much of a discussion on this podcast because not many of them, I guess a lot of my friends here, but not many of the guests I've had recently knew Richard like we both did.
Yeah.
So if you want to talk a little bit about that, a little more about how we both had a friend who's a great comedian, really funny, also really tortured by his own demons, his own drug use, his own bad choices that he made. And then he committed suicide, and it's been really sad and really terrible, and I feel bad for it. And for me though, and I just have to be completely honest, and I've told my other friends, Gabe, who's like really close to me, cause you know, we all came up in Portland together, really pissed me off.
Yeah.
It really pissed me off because I was like, there's this guy who, and you know, I've had to talk with other people who deal with mental issues and just to understand that, like, he didn't see things the way that we saw them.
Yeah.
But from the outside in, it was like, man, here's this guy who with less effort than most can slay a room and can just crush chit chat. And fearless. I saw him destroy a room just eating a cheeseburger and not doing a joke, just eating a cheeseburger on set. And to just see him time after time self-sabotage and not believe in himself or hurt other people. And then, you know, eventually, you know, take his own life. I feel bad for that, and I feel bad for the overall situation, but I can't lie that there's always still been this sense of, because when people put the anniversary up and they like, oh, I miss you, I usually just go, fuck you, Richard.
Wow. Yeah, I can understand that. I almost have like a, not an opposite reaction, but like my uncle killed himself when I was younger and he had like four kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was like, you know, a lot of anger there for like, what the hell, man? Like these four kids, like one of them was like one or two at the time. And it was just, so then I guess since I had that in my life, someone like Richard who doesn't have any kids, I know he's got like people who love him, but a lot of times, like when someone does that, I'm just like, that was their choice. You know, like he didn't want to be around and I don't know, like I wish I could have helped him or I wish he reached out or whatever it was, but it's like, it's his life, you know? So there's something about me that's just kind of, it's really sad when someone does that, but, and you, obviously you're mad at them because they took themselves away from everyone that loved them. But it's like, if he wasn't able to like cope and that was just the only way, it's like he took control or something. I don't know. I don't know what it takes to actually pull the trigger on that, but yeah, I guess I just feel more like sad, but like, not like relief, but it's like, okay, if you were feeling that much like, you know, anxiety and depression or whatever it was and hatred to yourself, so maybe there's some kind of relief for that. I don't know. But yeah, I think I felt that way with my uncle a lot, like just so angry. Like, why would you leave these four kids? So when someone like Richard is like, doesn't have, like, if you don't have kids for some reason, I'm like,
you're just like, whatever. You just checking out of a hotel. I didn't expect that to turn funny.
But yeah, fuck you, Richard.
Tell Brody Stevens we say hi, though, if you see him. What are your goals right now?
Oh, man, I'm trying to get back in shape. I was in really good shape before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And I gained a bunch of weight that first year. Then I lost, like, most of it. Then I had the baby and I gained like all of it back.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to get back in shape. I'm like approaching 40s, turning 39 soon.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to be super healthy when I get to 40.
We got the same goal. Yeah. I turned 40 in 6 months, five months now. And my goal is to be in the best shape of my life, physically, mentally, spiritually, when I turn 40 years old.
I think that's a great goal. I think 40 is like a good,
It feels like the start of your second life, the start of really being grown and adult, you know?
I like that. So yeah, that's definitely a big one for me. And just I'm trying to balance like my schedule a bit more. Like, I spent the last year just mostly with the kids and now they're kind of both in school. This was the first week they're both in school, which is like so much of relief. I'm doing more stand up, but I think I want to like, try to go on more dates with Abby. Like we haven't been on a date in like probably a year or something like super long. I'm like, all right, I got to do more stand up, but find those days where it's like, all right, let's just go to this restaurant for like an hour or something, you know? So I'm trying to find that balance.
Yeah. I think it's really a good part about like evolving as a comedian. I remember when I was younger and I'd watch like Jerry Seinfeld's documentary and stuff and just being like, yeah, that's right. Never have a family. Never, you know. And then in so many ways now I feel like, oh my God, my comedy, my life, everything would be more stunted if I didn't just evolve and go with life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it just grounds you. And, you know, I love comedy, but it's never going to be as important as, like, being a father, like, raising a kid, you know?
And I think it helps alleviate, because I see so many people who are so bitter about it. Like, oh, I didn't get this. I didn't do that. This didn't sell. I didn't, no one's offering me a special. And I feel like it's because their entire life is grounded in stand-up that they didn't take that time. I mean, and that's, I think that's one of the things you see evolve from different generations of comedy, right? We see all these people we grew up watching, and at least for me, I don't want to speak for other people, but at least for me, I'm like, oh, okay, they're fucking hilarious and they devoted their whole life to comedy and then they died at a hotel. Yeah. Or this guy spent his whole life devoted to comedy, didn't take care of his health, and he died at 50. Yep. And you see all these things and I go like, oh, what's the point in working hard if I don't get to enjoy my life or to have the reward?
Yeah. Yeah, I think early on I noticed that with some of my favorite comedians. They're just like depressed. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a hint, like, even though I love stand-up, it's never going to be the answer to life, right? Like, if you could, you know, just these people who have all the success you could ever want and they're still sad and depressed and suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just kind of need to make sure you're doing other things and making those human connections.
Yeah, and I think you really said it so dead on, because it's not like we're saying, oh, you need to go get married or have a family or anything like that, but it really is more just about having that balance of, like, make sure you have a good friend group that is outside. And it's so weird, because if it was any other profession, wouldn't be a thing you'd have to say. You wouldn't be like, oh, you're a dentist, so please make sure that not all your friends are dentists and, and that you guys just don't only talk about dental work. You're like, of course, this fuck, I wouldn't fucking do that. But with, like, comedy,
when dentists go to a party, they're only talking to the dentist in the corner.
Just only like judging, talking to dentists. Motherfuckers over here eating candy and shit.
Stop looking at their teeth.
Yeah, but comedians do that. Yeah, we do that. We only want to talk to each other. We only, and I think we, I'm just learning more. I get such a more well-rounded life of just talking to people who have nothing to do with what I do and just enjoy me as a person and don't care about what show I'm on or what next thing I'm doing or what I can book them on. They just like me, and that is priceless.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what you said, like, it doesn't have to be kids. It's just, like, community and, like, connections with, you know, either your family members or friends or just anyone. You know, it doesn't have to be raising a child.
Mm-mm. In fact, I don't recommend it for most.
That's true, yeah. It's not going to alleviate your stress.
It will add stress to it. It will showcase any cracks in your foundation.
I always try to do, like, a balance with people, like, thinking about having kids. I don't want to, like, sway them either way, but be honest. Like, okay, I like it, but don't do it if you're not sure.
Yeah, are you done sleeping? Are you just done with sleeping? Because if you are, then sure. But if you think you might want to sleep again, you might want to reconsider. But if you want to be fueled by the power of a thousand suns, that is the smile of your child. That's also good, too.
That is good.
What's your favorite thing you've ever acted on or that you... I guess I don't want to know your favorite sketch, because I might not. You've probably done so many, I haven't seen as many. But I've seen a lot of the
acting
stuff you've acted on.
I'd say Dream Corp. Dream Corp.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking you were going to say.
Even when it was happening, I knew, like, this is going to be one of the coolest things I ever do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had a lot of freedom on it. I kind of just made up a lot of stuff that I was doing. Like, I would just, and I started really, first season, I was kind of nervous and scared, and I'd get cut out of a scene, and I'd kind of take it personally, and just, it would get me really down. But then I slowly realized, like, oh, there's just too many people in this scene and I'm not necessary. So like, that'll cut, like, hours out of the day to just not have to cut to me standing in the corner. But, you know, by the third season, it was, like, just so fun. I felt so comfortable in my character, and I could just, you know, think of something that day and go, oh, what if I did this? And they'd let me try it. And it was weird. And it was actually so different than myself.
Mm-hmm.
The character, I think, like, second season, I realized, like, the character's, like, actually really cool. Like, it's just, like, you know, this drug addict, but, like, has all these weird friends, and he like runs the pharmacy. And so it was kind of allowed me to play something different than myself. Normally I just try to play myself. Mm-hmm. I just try to go, okay, where am I in this? Okay, this is just like a slightly different version of myself. But this character was nothing like me really. And that was fun. And he didn't look like me. I had like tattoos, cool hair. It was kind of a cool way to get into character every morning. Was like, all right, they're putting this crazy thing on my head. I'm getting all these tattoos. Like, I'm someone else. Mm. And that was fun.
Mm, it does sound fun. I've only done that a couple times. But it really, because I can say that's similar to you, where I'm like, oh, I'm just really good at being me.
Yeah,
how exactly. much of me do you want in this? Yeah. I can be me now. I could be me 3 years ago. I could whatever you want. But you're going to get some me. Yeah. And I've had to do a couple. Like, I think, I don't even think they ever release it or it ever will be released. But I got to play James Brown in a thing and wow. to be like, just like the opposite of being like, oh, I'm like coked out. I'm full of confidence yeah. and I'm unpredictable.
Yeah.
And it was really fun.
And it's in you.
Yeah,
you
know, it is in me. Yeah,
you know, you tap into it and you're like, oh, yeah. I'm cool.
Yeah. It was really, really fun. I really liked it. You said something that I wanted to elaborate on, but now I think I missed it because I talked about myself. Oh, so do you have any dream shows or things that you would love to be on? For me, it is a couple. Oh, I want to host Price is Right, and I would Ooh, like to
be
on What We Do in the Shadows, but then I also remember that that's all night shoots, so I'm okay with maybe not.
Yeah. I would love to just be like the funny neighbor, like that. I was like the Kramer, or like, you know, just someone who just comes in and does my own weird little thing and then leaves. And that's kind of what I was on Dream Corp. Mm-hmm. I just like to do that again, and just like just a different version of that. Like, just come on. I mean, it would be cool to be like the main character, but I think it's so much like more freedom to be the odd, strange neighbor or friend or someone. I like kind of being a sniper in the background.
Mm, yeah. So yeah. Yeah. I love that too. And this is what I'm better at. Even if I see a script and I see like a monologue or something, I'm usually like, I know you guys probably don't normally get this, but I work better with less lines.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
If I just say the one thing, yeah. it's going to hit harder than me saying six things.
Yeah, exactly. it's like its own challenge, though, only having one line. Because sometimes it's way harder to come in with, there's no cameras on you. There's mm-hmm. no one's even talking to you. Mm-hmm. And you just have the line that you have to like kind of say into the ether.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different world, but you're really good at it. And suits your skill set. And I think I do remember now what I was going to ask you, which is just like, I love when you're working on a dream project and you're aware of it. You know, sometimes I remember when I was first working on Undateable, I didn't realize how fun it was. I thought everything was like that. And then I went to another show and they were yeah. like, well, if you're going to improvise, we actually got to run that by somebody. And like, it was just like, oh, fuck. This is weird. Yeah. So now that I'm on Loot, I'm like, oh shit, this is like before. Like, they okay. respect me, they value me, they let me improvise things, you know, they want things their way, but then yeah. also they're like, oh, if you got an idea, just go. Yeah. If you fuck it up, it's fine, you yeah. know? And I really work well with that type of thing. And then for me, one of my favorite things I ever saw you do were you had those series of Skittles commercials that I thought were really funny, oh, yeah. which I think is really difficult to be funny in a national commercial. And I just did my first commercial. I never done commercial before. Wow. And doing a commercial is now that how I'm aware that the devil is real. And I just want to ask you what it was like for you, because I had never been in a situation where not only were people like, okay, you got it was definitely, I was like, oh, quicker, 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 because yeah. I was like, oh yeah, it's only 30 seconds. Now I might only be in it for 5 seconds. So they're like trying to get to my shit quicker. And yeah. I wasn't used to that as much. And then at the same time, they were like, you need to hold the chip like this. And I was like, no one's ever given me notes on chip holding.
Yeah, I've done a few now, and like I kind of used to hate it, and now I really like it. And because I look at it differently than like acting, I guess. It's almost like not like an athletic thing. But like I did this commercial where it was a Wendy's commercial, and I like bite into the burger, and it's not Wendy's. I'm eating like McDonald's, I think it's supposed to be. And I like try to throw it out my window, but it like sticks on the window, and I had to like get it to stick. So, but I felt like so proud of myself that I was able to like, almost like a robot. Mm. Just like, okay, here, I'm gonna do the same thing every time. I was not gonna do any improv. I'm just gonna like boop, boop, and then like keep doing it. I'll go back into it. And I kind of feel, I don't know, it's like I love like bar games, curling, shuffleboard, mm-hmm. and things like that. I kind of look at it like a thing like that. You're just like throwing a dart over and over again. Mm. So that's kind of how I see a commercial. It's just like, all right, what do you need me to do? All right, let me do that 1,000 times and like and reset and go. Pff, 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 pff. So I like it. Like, but yeah, it doesn't feel like creative.
No, it was definitely. I left going like, I did this for my kids.
Lord, I hope they play this a lot.
But like, I guess I like I love like being on set. And I love filming stuff. So I enjoy it in that capacity. Where I'm like, oh, we're still filming stuff. Like, what's the angle? What's the thing? Mm-hmm. So it's like more technical mm-hmm. and less like creatively fulfilling, but more, yeah, just reminds me of like a sport. Like,
I can see that. Yeah. And I think I like it. And I think I'm good at it naturally. And it's something, I mean, like it's literally one of the things I want to do. I want to be like a pitchman. I want to be a spokesperson for something. I love like when I see, like, you know, I love Craig Robinson, but anytime I see him, that's it. I go, man, that Pizza Hut shit. That's like, I want that so bad. Yeah, yeah. Just where you're the face of Pizza Hut or something. I would love that. I think I would be great at it.
Yeah, and so,
but at the same time, yeah, I come from that world of more, well, you get talking about the sketch where you're like, well, let's just figure it out. We're going to problem solve. We're going to try things 80 different ways. And then, and you're right with the thing. It's just like, we need you to exactly do this. Eat the chip in one bite.
that Starburst one was the first one I ever did. And in the audition, I improvised, and that's what they seemed to like. They're like, oh, what'd you say? Do that again. And so I was kind of like, oh, yeah. So I went into the shoot thinking that. And I was saying the thing I improvised. And like a few takes in, someone's like, why? You're not doing, just do this. And I was like, oh, okay. That's what you like. I changed it a little bit and I thought you liked that. And I was like, very quickly realized like, oh, this was so funny. All these commercial auditions, it's always like improv skills, a must. It's like, you're not going to be improvising.
They want you to hit their exact line.
Yeah. Or even like the last commercial I did, I was in it for like a second and they go like action. And I'm just like, me and a girl are getting a tattoo and we're like looking like we like or maybe regret it. And I was just like, they go action. And I just kind of do like one look and they're like, don't do that. Like, don't even act. Like, it's literally just like that.
Yeah, because yeah, like that's because like it's going to go for a second.
Yeah. You know? Like, stop moving. Yeah. Like, what am I here for?
Yeah, it really changes you, which is sometimes what you need to knock your ego out a bit and just be like, oh, I'm just here for them to sell this item.
Yeah, I'm just a meat puppet.
Yeah.
Put my hand, okay, I sit like this. Okay.
Yeah. Which I think some people can't do, but I think. I mean, I think being a parent really helps you.
Yeah, and like you said, like I would do that if that could feed my kids forever, I would do that all the time.
Yeah, because really, I mean, we get to do so many things we want to do, and it's such a fun career that when you go like, oh, this is a bad day at the office, is me just not enjoying the 5 hours I got to spend doing this stuff. You know, it's fun.
And I like sitting in the chair, getting makeup on.
I do. I just love being on set. Yeah, I agree with you. I love being on set. I love looking around and seeing lights and then looking up and seeing no ceiling. And I'm like, oh, all right, this is phony. This is fake. I love it when things let me know they're fake instead of pretending that they're real. It's one of the reasons I love pro wrestling so much. Like, thank you for letting me know.
The news doesn't let me know.
Actually, also being on set like really works well with my like social anxiety. Because you can't ever have too long of a conversation with anyone. Like, especially with the actor, you know, it's like you're here, you get your makeup on, you have like a 30-minute conversation, then you leave. And then you go get your thing on. You can talk to the sound person for like 5 minutes, and then you leave. Like, you just get to kind of leave. Mm. And I like, it works really well with my social anxiety, because sometimes I just like get stuck in a conversation, or I don't know, can I leave now? But with being on set,
is like, that how you feel right now?
No. As I was saying, I was like, I hope he doesn't think. Can I?
Are we wrapping up?
Let's talk a little bit more about your sister before we do wrap up. I love Maureen.
Me too.
She's the best. I don't know if she's done this podcast. I guess I need to book
her.
She did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My old house.
I listened to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the reasons, I mean, there's a group of people. I'm a very loyal person when it comes to this business, especially. And if you believe in me
first, if you come in before other people just jumping on the bandwagon, yeah,
I always got your back. And I'm like, you know, do whatever you want. Like, I just had this conversation with Bobby Moynihan where he was like, I'm working on this project. I'm thinking, and I was like, Bobby, you don't even got to pitch it to me. I trust you. I love you. Yeah. I'm in, you know? And it's the same thing with Maureen, because she opened up my mind to the fact that I could act. When I was here, I was just like, you know, stand-up sketches. I think I did the sketch with you as the homeless king.
Yeah.
And then Maureen was like, I want to make you a lead in my short film.
Yeah.
And I was
actually,
like,
I'm wearing the shirt.
Oh, Movie My Machine. And it was the first time I ever, me and Matt Bronger, and you were in it, and it was just such a fun experience. It was the first time I'd ever work on a set like that. First time someone ever listened to me having ideas about a character, yeah, or just giving me notes and telling me things. And then I always, like, in a lot of ways, I consider working with her like a mark of my progress. When I'm like, okay, we went from the short film to then now we work together on the indie film.
Yeah.
Golden Arm, and it got such great, for the people who saw it, got such great response and great reviews. And then I'm like, okay, well, so hopefully,
yeah,
a few years from now, we both will work on a studio film.
This will be the next Star Wars or something.
But she's just a big believer of people and a great big powder keg of positivity, of the make cool shit, of believing in yourself, of supporting other women in entertainment and comedy. And so I just love Maureen, and I know this is your interview, but I want you to talk about her.
I love Maureen too. Yeah. I mean, she's, you know, my older sister. So she was like my way into all this stuff. You know, she had the cool movies. She introduced me to like all the cool stuff when I was a kid. And she was the one, like, my friends would come over and be like, oh, we want to make a dumb home video. Will you film it? And if she filmed it, it was so much better than when we filmed it. Mm. And yeah, I think she's really good at, I mean, she's so good at lots of stuff. When it's kind of cool to watch her direct. Like, there's a lot of stuff I feel like you don't know directors do, but they have to, like, you know, they're just manning the whole ship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just the actors. It's like the DPs and the production company and just all the writers. And she just like goes, she does her homework.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's come so ready. Which is kind of, I didn't know that about her, because we were both like bad students. And then all of a sudden I just kind of see her like on set, and you're like, whoa, you are like, you did the homework. Like, we never used to do our homework. And she does it, you know? So it's really cool. Like, she's just so prepared with like, when you draw like a picture of what's going to be the
storyboard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She has that all planned. She can see it. And she just has so many opinions. Right. She's so opinionated. So she has all these ideas, but then she's also able to take other people's ideas and allow them to have their own voice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, really rare with a director. It's like, you know, really good directors know what they want, but sometimes they don't want to budge.
Mm-hmm.
And she's able to kind of do both. She has her vision, but she's like, oh, you got something? Okay, let me see what it is. Well, that fits perfectly in here. Or, oh, no, we can't do that.
Yeah, she's really one of the most actor-friendly directors I've ever worked with. And the fact that I think for me, and I would imagine most actors, the best thing that you can have is have someone that can give you a great base to act off, to know what you want, to be able to explain what they want from you.
Yes.
And then at the same time, be open to what you see, to what you could bring in, what the differences of what hiring you would bring to that character. And a lot of people don't do that, or they don't understand the actor's emotions and dealing with things and how it can be pressurized. Yeah. And she's so good at making you make everything feel fun, make everything feel like we're just here to have a good time and enjoying each other. And working on that on Golden Arm, just the fact that we would work together on set for like 14 hours and then go eat dinner together and then go see what you guys, what we doing on the day off together.
Yeah.
And I'd never been on a set like that.
Oh,
I, sometimes people will invite you to stuff, but I'm like, I'm not showing up, you know? And this one was like, no, I want to go. I'm loving these people. I'm going to be sad when they're gone. I love working with Betsy and Mary and Eugene and all these people. And it was such a blast. And again, go check out the movie if you get a chance, Golden Arm. It's available wherever you can find movies. And but I remember to this day, like, just because we talked about the character that I was going to do, and she was like, he's the promoter of this thing, he loves it, he loves women, he's a big horn dog, he's always hitting on every woman. And I was like, okay, that's fine, that's good, I can probably do that. But I was like, what if he just really likes strong women?
Yeah.
And so, because I think originally I was supposed to hit on Betsy, Mary, everybody. And I was like, well, why would I hit on Mary? I don't know her.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's strong.
Yeah.
So why would I just focus on this woman I know is strong and I'm kind of ignoring this more traditionally attractive woman?
Yeah.
Because I never seen her put somebody's arms to the mat.
Yeah.
You know? And she was like, oh, yeah. That's more specific. That makes it better. And I never had someone take such, like, I had some people be like, okay, yeah, maybe. But like someone to go like, okay, yeah, we'll change it to that. I never had that before.
And that's a smarter choice, because I think that was in so much more service of the movie. Because I think it's easy to kind of go, oh, here's this like female empowerment movie. Now we'll have like a douchebag guy just be like kind of, you know, hitting on everyone and being misogynistic, which, you know, seems like at face value, oh, that might be a good idea. But your character is like celebrating these like strong women. And it just makes, and I think she sees that too. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, this is how it's written and here are the jokes. But if we let this character love arm wrestlers and like not just hitting on them because they're women, hitting on them because they're these women that are powerful and strong. I don't know. I think that was such a better choice for the movie.
Yeah, I mean, and it just was more fun for me.
Yeah.
And I guess because any character you want to play, you want to be able to find something you love about them.
Yeah.
You know, you never want to play a character you're like, oh, who is this guy? I hate this guy. And so, like, I'm like, yeah, I'll hit on anybody if I actually am like enamored in them.
Yeah.
But to just be schmarmy, then
What's great is she's able to, if it didn't make sense, if it was just like, no, Ron, we can't have you do this choice.
Mm-hmm.
She might, you know, do the thing you were saying, like, okay, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she's smart enough to understand, like, oh, that's a better fit. And also to know you can play that because that's you, you know, like you're going to play to yourself, your strengths better than, you know, the script before they wrote knew you were going to be the character.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome.
It really is. She's really good and nothing but big, bright future for that family. That's a full family. You got that full family.
Yeah.
Really, what time is it? I don't even know. I've been going so long.
Uh-oh.
Right at the times. We're right at the times. Some people hate it when I check the time, but hey, go fuck yourself.
This is real. This is raw.
Last thing I want to ask you is the same thing that we ask every guest, and that's just for a little nugget of advice, a little pearl of wisdom.
Okay, I think one small thing my wife always tells me when I get overwhelmed is just bring a brick. I like this. That's probably super simple advice, but it really helps me. I feel like it's because I get easily overwhelmed. I'm a procrastinator. I'm like, oh, I should have done this. I should have done that. Oh, I'm so behind with everything. And she's like, just bring a brick, you know, and you're like, okay. And it usually helps, you know, just pick one thing and just get that thing done. Cross it off your list. And you just got to do one thing at a time, you know, because I always kind of get overwhelmed by like all my goals or all the things that I feel like I have been putting off. And then usually makes me do nothing. I'm like, oh, I got this. I got that. I'm not gonna do anything. So that's a small one. And then I think just get outside and move your body. That helps me. Is like, I've been going on hikes a lot. It helps me write. Just like I get stuck, depressed, I just go outside and move.
Do you deal with depression often?
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I think depression, anxiety, I think it's a mix of both. I think I definitely get depressed. I think I have anxiety more often than depression, but it kind of leads into it. And then, you know, just things pile up, things are dirty, you know, you got the kids. So you're just like, I barely have time to do anything but these kids. And, you know, they're very rewarding, but you're like, oh crap, I could have done like this week that they're in school. It's been crazy. I just like have like a few hours to like sit at a laptop and like look at emails. It's nice. But yeah, definitely struggle with depression and like, you know, like just kind of giving myself a break. I think, I think I started going to therapy during the pandemic, and that was like a big kind of simple advice from the therapist was just like to like be kinder to myself. I feel like sometimes I'm like always wanting to be like better or like this or that. It's like, okay, just like acknowledge that you've done good. You're doing good.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the things I've read before that always helped me was that like stress is often the difference between what we envision in our minds and what is reality.
Yeah.
And sometimes we think the only way to alleviate that stress is to change the physical aspect of it, to change it to that we get what we want. But sometimes it's about changing your mental, about letting go of that thing and not caring so much, and then alleviate that stress. And I really do think that's a subject I didn't really get into with you before, but one of the things of now being like 16 years into comedy and getting older is that I have less of this, like, I need to get this next thing. I need this. I want this special. I need to Conan. I need this. Someone's going to give me a show. Yeah. I need this. And now I'm more, because I'll even talk to my wife and she'll be like, you always just talk about this and this. She's like, are you as motivated? And I'm like, I'm still motivated. Yeah. I just don't want to stress myself out about things that are not in my control. I'm not in control if somebody wants to give me a show or if they want to do you know, put me in a movie or that. All I can really, so now it's just like my main goal is like, I want to be in better shape, better actor, better comedian, and let everything else fall into place.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's the title of the show, Getting Better.
It really is. It is real. It's part of my life. Sometimes I'm doing good. Sometimes I'm struggling.
Yeah. I feel that.
You have anything you want to plug or where people can find you?
Yeah, well, check out Dream Corp. It's on Hulu. Check out Dead Kevin on Instagram or YouTube. Follow me on Instagram or all the TikTok and all that stuff. Just at Ahmed Barucha. I think that's it.
I love it. It really got mild and mellow.
Yeah. You don't have to check it out.
Check it out. No, let's do good plug. I'll do it. Here we go. He's a great actor, great comedian, one of the like just better spirits to be around. If you feeling blue and you want to watch something silly and fun and just feel good about yourself, look up something that this man has been in, whether it's the sketches, whether it's the Dream Corps, whether it's his stand-up. I just hope to see more and more of your stand-up that people can see either online or TV or whatever, because you're really good and nobody thinks like you. And I never seen anybody and I try to do the same. And so when I see somebody else do it, I love it because, you know, there's a thing that like 80% comedians kind of talk about the same stuff and they're all trying to write the best version of the same joke over whatever topic is in the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
And I never see you been to like what's popular or whether you're always coming from your perspective, your view, and you always coming with something where I can, even if I go like, oh man, I love that joke, I can never go like, oh man, oh, I would have thought, like, I never think of go, ah, oh, I would have thought of that. It's like, I'm glad that you exist so that I could hear that.
Thank you. That's really nice.
You're welcome. Thanks,
man. That's awesome.
Of course. I love you. You're a good dude.
Love you too.
Thanks for coming.
Of course.
Thanks for listening. Bye.